An interview with Herbert D. Lewin at 2904 East 2nd Street, Long Beach, California. The date is September 20th, 1984, and the interviewer is Ann Andrews.
That's
what it started, is really when you first came to Long Beach.
Well, actually, I came to Long Beach the first time in 1921. My father was an airman. He came down to Discovery all of that and got interested in this field, and I was going to school at Wentworth Military Academy in Lexington, Missouri, and then I spent the summers out here with him. But it was an off and on existence in all high school, and so I graduated from high school in 1925, and a couple of years after that, I lived part of the time in Long Beach and part of the time in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So, from that time on, while my residence there was permanent, because even though in the last few years, up to 1966, which was my retirement date from the Air Force, Long Beach was my home of record. Although I didn't have a home here, after the Pacific Coast closed, so I used to use the 3rd and American branch where Barry built one of his Button buildings. That was my home address, and that's where I lived the last few years of my service in the Air Force.
And your father, then, what did he do?
My father was an oil man on Signal Hill, and he died in 1954. He died in 1954, which was quite a while after this went on.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I was in the Air Force. I went into the service in 1943 and came out at the end of World War II for a brief period, and then went back in and stayed in.
Well, when you went in during World War II, I imagine that was the Army Air Force at that time.
I went into the service in 1943, February the 3rd, and was almost immediately assigned to the Air Force. The city manager and a couple of them and Colonel, otherwise, I've forgotten his name, the commander of the fairing command out here, came up to the induction center, and got me transferred down to Long Beach. I never went to basic training or anything, and I was sent down here directly, and then I stayed here a short time, and then I was taken to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, because of Army flight control. Part of my career, I was mixed up in the allocation of airspace and what have you, as well as the airport manager of Long Beach and so on and so forth. Prior to that, I was in the oil business and in civil aviation.
So when did you start flying?
1925, on the 22nd of August.
Mm.
The year I graduated from high school, and my first instructor was Eddie Belandi, later Vice President of Northrop Aircraft, ex-World War I Navy pilot, on the corner of 125th and Western in Los Angeles. There was a strip along there. There was Charlie Dicer had the first one, and then Rogers Airport where I started, and then Jack Fry and his outfit next, and on down towards town, going north. But Charlie Dicer and Rogers Air Force, we had to use Charlie Dicer's field. He had a spare field there for instruction, takeoff and landings, because Rogers Airport was short and all landings had to be crosswind.
Mm-hmm.
So Eddie would take us over there and solo us out of that field and what have you, and then after that I just went on the usual thing.
What kind of plane was that?
The first plane that I soloed was a Standard. Lincoln, Nebraska, made in Lincoln, Nebraska. I think it had a HISO engine in it, but I was inducted at a later date in the OX5 club, and I noticed that they put me down as having learned to fly an OX5 Standard, but I don't know, I can't remember exactly, and it wasn't important at the time. I think it was a HISO engine, a Hispano Cruiser engine. They had both. They were the same thing, practically. Except for
that.
No, I was never a military pilot. You don't need to put it in your story, but I washed out of it a couple of times trying to get into it. I never was a military pilot.
But you stayed in the airport.
No, this is prior to my going into the Air Force.
Oh, okay.
See, I'm talking about, you're talking about my whole life, so I've included a long period. In this book here, you'll find some allusions to certain people. I think we can come back to this later. I haven't got my mind very well organized on my personal life, which, well, I had three careers which I studied. First of all, business, Roughneck on Signal Hill, and so on and so forth. And Marley Drury and I worked together, and you know who he is, an All-American footballer.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one was in civil aviation, in Long Beach and other places. And the third one was the military.
Mm-hmm.
So I can come back to that, but in thinking this thing over, I thought more about your interest would be in the participation of the junior chamber. Is that true?
That's right. Would you like to discuss that?
Yeah. I have my thoughts fairly well organized. I was on Signal Hill, as I said, and doing all right and everything until a friend of mine named Pal Hawk, Ron Hawk, went to work for the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And it was Ron Hawk that interested me in coming down from the hill once in a while and trying to do something for the community in which we sat. And I was so much impressed with the people that I met here. Jack King was the president the first time I had any contact with him, and the second one was Gary Mabish. And I, at the time, I think I appreciated his work more so than any human being that I believe I've ever met. And during his presidency, I was in the junior chamber and very happy and delighted that I met such a fine bunch of fellows, including George Badenhausen and Jack Harold White and a few others. And I was engaging in the Safety with Life program, which I thought was a very good move, diametrically opposed to the sub-1973 thing of Save Your Energy. But anyway, we did save a lot of lives lighting up streets and what have you around the country and thereabouts. But anyway, at that time, Barry was the president of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, was the Junior Chamber representative to the Chamber of Commerce Board, and he met with the board. They were on the course of their successors, several successive failures to locate some kind of an industrial, aviation industrial complex at the airport out there. And the last fiasco was the failure to enter Swede Fleet in locating a plant here in Long Beach. And we took it down to San Diego, which you know to be the Consolidated Bulk Feed Plant.
Oh.
At that time, there was so much adverse opinion. I don't want to hurt anybody's soul, but this is a literal truth. There was so much adverse criticism of the chamber and other people that most of it not accurate, that they were worn out with the thing. So they decided to give the function of aviation to the Junior Chamber of Commerce. So Barry appointed Ev Hawking chairman of the committee. Ev was a pilot and a newspaper man and what have you, and I'll think of his name in a minute, another lad that was the co-chairman of the committee, Ed Simon. And they started and got this thing together. And so Barry, in the meantime, found out that I had an acquaintance in aviation circles that possibly they didn't have, or anyone else did, actually they didn't. Jack Fry and a few others. So he asked me to join that committee, which I did. And I became very active in it, and we developed the hangars on the airport were in the what later became the clear zone of the southeast-west runway. So we was our first project was to move those hangars back. In the meantime, while everyone talked about further development and getting something in that would really put the Southport on the feet and all that sort of thing, other than the Naval Reserve and the Army Reserve, which were well and equipped and on the field. And the Navy particularly had an extensive training program going. And from that, the committee got into serious consideration about this lack of ability or lack of success in interesting some aviation firm and locating in Long Beach. You must remember that in that day, which is the mid-30s, 75% of the aviation industry, industrial industry, was in Los Angeles County. And we had none of it here. So we determined that we'd see what we could do after we were given this responsibility about developing some kind of industrial participation in that airport out there. It was too late to talk to Rube Fleet because he'd already had already gone to San Diego and was shut in down there. So we met all of our efforts. The first thing that we decided as a committee was, how could we sell that airport or anything else if, like the grocery, we didn't have anything on the shelves? So we decided we'd enter into an airport improvement program. And we had, as a forerunner of this, the master plan of airports, the regional master plan of airports for Southern California, the Chamber of Commerce of Los Angeles and the County Regional Planning Commission. Mm-hmm. The chief engineer of the County Regional Planning Commission was Major Bill Fox. I digress a moment. He later became the first manager at Henderson Field in Guadalcanal. And was a distinguished record in the Marine Corps, and he came home a Brigadier General. But anyway, he developed this master plan of airports, and I'm prepared to leave this with you, but I want it back.
Oh, of course.
And
One of those people in here was the second director of aeronautics in the city of Long Beach, was Earl Lloyd. He was also a 29. Anyway, it's in there. And that will show you the place in the planning stage at the airport in June.
Oh,
I see. Adams Airport, Culver City Airport. Yeah. Oh, I see. That's the whole thing. That's the whole picture then. The first four. Let me see. You got that turned off?
Yeah.
It's a map of a large-scale map of the master plan. It includes all of the airports that are developed at the present time. On this index, I did have this thing there, and I must have pulled it out.
So we did not, you know, like to buy it, and then we could photocopy the
press
that we
should have there. Well, just as long as you get it back to me again. Am I being too verbose now?
No, you're being
fine.
You're
saying
you're smooth.
This is the Long Beach Airport.
Yes.
As it existed when this thing started.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the southeast-west runway, which is a taxi strip in the present thing. And these dotted lines in here are the eventual development. This 1,800 feet here came down to here, and the whole airport was consisting of this after we stopped the enlargement going on it. This is the proposal. At the time this thing was gone, it wasn't in existence. The line ran about like this, and that was a doubling of the original 80 acres. So that'll show you. And then later on, there's a more detailed development of the Long Beach Airport as gotten out by Bill Fox and that bunch, with the help of some Long Beach people. The engineering on the original plan to give us some groceries on the shelf. Done by Colonel Jesse Jackson, who is an engineer in the city engineer's office. I believe it's called Public Service Office or Public Works Office or something, of the city. And it was almost coincidental with the development of the International Airport in Washington, which was a model for further airport development in the United States. This, of course, was done by the CAA. So with a combination of the region, Los Angeles County, the CAA in Santa Monica, which was the head of the sixth region, why Joe Marriott was the head of that, also a colonel reserved in the Air Corps, and let's see. The part that we played in the thing, the Junior Chamber of Commerce. So we developed, using that plan and what have you, we developed a sales program, and we built this little blocks of balsa wood and hangers and things like that, and superimposed them on one of the maps, and had a board, and we got a globe, and we put air routes of the world on it, particularly into the Pacific. And the idea was to make this a focal point for all aviation interest in the Pacific area.
Mm-hmm.
And you picture it as a great round. Later, in the construction of the airport building out there, which I was able to get them to make the floor of the main thing, this map, a relief map in terracotta on the main floor. That was done by the WPA, one of their art projects, and it shows, like shows today, it shows Long Beach and
and the entire perimeter of the Civic Circle, which was the thing that we tried to sell Long Beach and Barry and Eddie and all the rest of us, George, John Cox and others, carried that thing around with a little globe and got in any time we could to talk to a service club and tried to popularize the thing and the center on the city developing the airport so that we'd have something on the shelf to sell to these firms that we were doing. Well, to make a long story short, this kind of stuff went on for quite a while. We developed another thing called Wings Over the Nation, which had a certain amount of cheesecake in it, but a very serious thing. We invited all of the airlines to bring a stewardess and a captain to Long Beach for dinner. And we arranged for all the civic leaders that could think of, and the city council and business and everybody else that was of any importance in the city of Long Beach to come to the Pacific Coast Club and listen to this program that we were going to put on. And I got an old friend of mine named Jack Knight. You may have heard of him. He was a famous original pilot of United Airlines, one of a bunch around New York there, and I'll think of the name of the thing, the field in a minute, that were the first airmail pilots in existence. And Jack had, in proving the transcontinental route of what later became United Airlines, Jack threw the legs from Cheyenne to Omaha. We were supposed to have been relieved, but the day before this strike took place, Jack broke his jaw. And so he staggered into Omaha in a blinding snowstorm. The weather was so bad that the pilot that was supposed to relieve him and fly on to Chicago had long since gone downtown and gotten a drink and forgot about it. And so Jack had no relief, so they gassed up the airplane and he flew it on to Chicago, and there again the pilot was able to pick up where Jack left off and go on into New York, and that became the first United Airlines thing. Now Jack is an old friend of mine, and so he came down to make the main speech, and we had all of the other airlines too. That is the major ones. There were only 17 airlines in the United States at the time, and we had only the major ones at this thing. And it was a very successful thing, and it gave us a real start. Mm-hmm. And from that time on, we had better receptions through the whole thing. We had such people as Lockheed and Douglas and others had representatives there to look this thing up, because actually while we used the stewardesses and the others for glamour, why attraction, why we were all the time had a very serious thing that we wanted industrial development in that airport out there. So we made a deal with Clark Bonner, president of Montana Land Company, Lakewood, you know, is Montana Land Company, also the Home State Mine in South Dakota, to sell any bona fide industrial firm the north line of the airport, which had been extended in the meantime to the present boundary, all at the expense of the water department, for the same price that they sold the land to the water department, $1,000 an acre. So that was the start, and that was the start of the Junior Chamber Aviation Committee getting things on the line. And we were able to get some interest in town and some support and what have you, and then we fell into a lucky thing. The city manager of Glendale, previous city manager of Glendale, California, that was city manager during the time that they developed the Grand Central Air Terminal which was in competition with the all-existent Burbank, which was built in 1925, incidentally. He had built the Grand Central Air Terminal and interested American Airlines in terminating there. And the rest of the airlines terminated at Burbank, and American terminated at Lindale. Then J.W. Shirleyville, the manager, came down to Long Beach and succeeded Del Dorton as city manager. And he fell into this thing having been interested in airport development in his previous, in his background, in the municipal sense. And of course became a first-class advisor to this Junior Chamber of Commerce Committee, and particularly in the political field and public relations field. And with the help of the city and what have you, that we were able to put together this thing. Towards the end of this campaign, it's quite long, maybe a couple of years, Charlieville asked me if I would take over the creation of a new job called the airport manager of Long Beach. We had a superintendent out there that was a resident, a fellow named Putnam, very good name, but lacking somewhat in contacts and what have you. And so I was appointed airport manager. At the time, I was still part of the committee that Barry had started and still took an active part in it, and I didn't, as long as there was no conflict of interest, I didn't have any. I did have trouble with Los Angeles and some of the other places because of, they were trying to develop Minesfield at the same time, and of course we were in competition, and I had offers in Leadfield, Ballast, and other places that I didn't take. But anyway, I stayed there, and one of the things that I did early in the thing, when the WPA project was well gone, I wrote letters to various and sundry big airport airplane manufacturers in the United States, and one of them was the Douglas Aircraft Company. I was downtown one day, and this will get you into the Douglas Beetle, and there are other details that should have come before this in the narrative, but then you can always bring them out. But anyway, I was downtown talking to Charlottesville about something or other, and he was the boss, of course, and I was the airport manager. We had developed the Department of Aeronautics, and I was the first director of the Department of Aeronautics, and we had successively resisted combination with the Harbor Department, which would have been very fine in one way because they had a lot of money and we didn't have any, but I didn't think it was expedient to do it. But anyway, I got a call from the lady that fixed this book, my secretary, that there was a man named Cover out there looking all over the airport and he wanted to see me. So I said, tell him I'll be down. Well, come right out. He didn't know who she was talking to. And it was Carl Cover and Tom McMahon, two men from Douglas. Tom McMahon was treasurer of Douglas, and as I told you, Carl Cover was a vice president of operations. And they had come down there, and they had shown them around the field and that sort of thing, and finally gotten a hold of me. And when I got there, why, we went over the whole plans and what have you and talked about the thing and answered the letter, I guess. And I told them that they could buy that land on the north side, and they showed me what they were interested in for $1,000 an acre. So they said, all right, after a long discussion, lasting until around 5:30 or so, they departed. And I called Charlieville and told him what was happening. You needn't repeat this. Charlieville's reaction was, "Herb, how often have I told you, do your drinking after office hours?" He said, "You sit right where you are, I'll be right out." So he tore out here and out to the airport. And we kept there and discussed the whole thing and made our plans accordingly. And the next morning, bright and early, I was just there in his office, and we were to get organized in case we did get a favorable reaction to Culver and McMahon's original deal. Remember, Donald Douglas was the president of the company.
Where was the company at that time?
Santa Monica. That was their original headquarters, moved from a couple of barns back in Sawtelle, right, well, west of Sawtelle, down to the Santa Monica Airport. But anyway, we were talking about various and sundry things, the organization of the people that were best capable of presenting utility answers.